Hello and welcome to Press TV's News Analysis. Coming out of Tehran, I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has offered a new initiative to end the crisis in his country, which includes talks and a referendum. But so far, Assad has gotten a thumbs-down reaction from the opposition and their foreign backers, who simply say that Assad must go. Now, the Syrian government says it will never give in to terrorism. Stay with us as we take an in-depth view of the latest situation coming out of Syria.
Syrian President Bashar al-Assad has outlined a plan to help resolve the ongoing crisis in his country politically.
Regional countries and international countries will be committed to stopping, financing and arming and harboring the armed groups. At the same time, the armed groups must stop all the terrorist acts. And after that, the military operations by the Syrian armed forces will stop. Number two, to find a mechanism that everybody will be committed. Number three, the current government will directly begin with comprehensive contacts with all of the members of Syrian society to hold a national dialogue conference whereby all of those parties who want a solution in Syria, all of them can participate, whether they be parties inside Syria or outside Syria.
President Assad says the reconciliation conference will reach a national charter that reinforces Syria's sovereignty and territorial integrity, rejects interference in its domestic affairs, and abandons terror. The national charter will then be put to a popular referendum. After its approval, a government formed of all Syrian groups would abide by the laws which were agreed upon in the National Reconciliation Conference, including the election law. President Assad stressed his government is ready for talks with anyone who cares about the security of Syria.
We will hold dialogue with political parties and individuals who didn't sell our country to strangers. We will hold dialogue with those who laid down arms.
Assad says the current confrontation in Syria is not between the government and the opposition, but between Syria and its enemies. He said the government is fighting against those who want to weaken Syria and promised that it will continue to defend the nation against terrorists and their foreign backers. Damascus accuses the US and its allies Turkey, Qatar and Saudi Arabia of financing and arming the opposition. The Syrian National Coalition, which represents foreign-backed opposition groups, has rejected President Assad's call for national reconciliation. It says the plan is against international efforts to resolve the Syrian crisis. The opposition's Western backers have also rejected Assad's plan. The European Union insisted that the Syrian president must step down to allow for political transition. Britain accused Assad of giving empty promises. The opposition and their foreign supporters have at various occasions rejected talks with the government. In fact, they're accused of working against international plans for a political solution, including the Geneva Agreement, and obstructing the work of UN and Arab League observer missions who are set to oversee the implementation of a peace plan. Some observers believe external players are trying to hinder political efforts to prepare the grounds for military intervention, and that, they say, is aimed at achieving a greater goal, Syrian regime change and ultimately partition. But so far, these goals are far from being achieved, as it seems government troops are simply too tough to be defeated.
Well, I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of London from the Syrian Social Club, Mr. Haytham al-Sabahi, and out of Damascus, freelance journalist and analyst Ala Ibrahim. And out of Washington, senior fellow and director of the Center for Political Military Analysts at Hudson Institute, Mr. Richard White. Thank you all for being with us. Well, let's start it off in London with Mr. al-Sabahi. How significant overall do you see the president's speech being?
I mean, good evening to you and to your guests and viewers, first of all. The president's speech today was the turning point, in the Syrian crisis from military to a political one. He outlined and the exact what the Syrian people or most of the Syrian people want to hear out of politicians. They want to know is the crisis where it's going, especially after the last 2 weeks when we've been hearing there is a political solution to the Syrian crisis and all sorts of rumors. So the president came out today and he put his plan on the table, which is acceptable from most of the Syrians, because that's what we want to see. We want to see the government to go forward with its plan for the solution in Syria. Despite after the West, the countries who were inflaming the military crisis in Syria, like Qatar and Saudi Arabia, of course, with their masters, United States, has taken a step back. The Syrian president, Bashar al-Assad, took a step forward, and that's instead of going back with them and start, tick for tack, he's taking the step forward. He is outlined the crisis in Syria, divided the Syrians to Syrians who carrying arms on the Syrian soil, which may lay down their arms, and there is on the other side the Takfiris and the jihadis, who is being pushed by United States and its allies to come to Syria, and the third of them is the chest pawn, who they are outside the countries. When the president said, "We don't need to speak to you; you are just the slaves to your masters."
Okay. Let me turn to Damascus and get Mr. Ibrahim on this. What about that, Mr. Ibrahim? The president has said basically that he's going to deal. That he's basically giving an olive branch to those inside of the country who laid down their arms. But this solution, whatever solution is going to come about, it has to come from within the country itself. Immediately, we have seen reactions, first of all, from the opposition and also from their Western backers, basically saying no deal, that the only solution is President Bashar al-Assad stepping down. Why do you think that we have seen such an immediate and harsh reaction from them?
Because whatever the president says, whatever the president does, it's irrelevant to how these external sides view the crisis in Syria. For entities like the European Union, for example, who have been asking the president to leave his office 1 or 2 months into the crisis, it would be only natural for them to continue with this quest to ask the president to step down, as they did today. Also, when we speak about the coalition of opposition and revolutionary powers, also known as the Doha Coalition, the coalition also was founded on the basis of rejecting any dialogue with the current Syrian government and trying to overthrow it using power and asking for more arms supply from the external backers of the opposition. So I think the problem with the president's speech today, or the problem with many people with the president's speech today, is high expectations. No speech can solve the crisis. No plan, no matter how good or elaborate it may seem, can solve the crisis right now. The situation is very complex. And unfortunately, the fact remains that it's all up to field developments. If the government forces are gaining grounds, then the president can dictate conditions on the external players and the external backers of opposition. And if they're not, I think he will be more willing to accept the conditions of those foreign players.
Okay, well, let me turn to Mr. White in Washington. Now, Mr. White, what the president has basically said, that this is not a revolution, because in revolutions, basically, the revolutionaries do not kill their own people. But he said that this is a war, that foreigners are basically trying to destroy the country. Your take, sir.
It's wrong on two accounts. I mean, one, historically, we know that revolutions are incredibly vicious and destructive. We have the civil war in China, in Russia, in the French Revolution, I mean, even the American Revolution. Those are incredibly violent. The second point, the foreigners, I'm not aware that the countries that are backing the opposition are trying to destroy Syria. I think some of them are trying to destroy the Assad regime. But to go back, I think that the previous speaker was fairly correct in his analysis. From what I've seen, this kind of a gesture would have made a big difference after the first months of protests, when Turkey and U.S. and other countries were still thinking that Assad could lead the reform effort. At this point, it won't make any difference. I mean, I think that the power now is in the street and in the field commanders, and they're going to fight until Assad leaves or until they're defeated militarily. I think it's going to be one side or the other will win. I don't see a political transition or a coalition government at this point. It's just gone on too long, and the factions who are fighting have been too polarized now to reach that kind of a deal.
Okay, what about that? Turning to London, Mr. Al-Sabiyyi, what do you think about what our previous speaker has said, that basically it's too late for what President Assad has put on the table today? Excuse me, that if he had done it earlier on, perhaps it would have been more acceptable, and that the people in the streets now will not accept what he is saying.
What the President Assad today said, exactly what the Syrian people, they say. I mean, for this crisis, there were a few points and a few agendas. It was taken from the streets to arms to fights, and in the last 2-3 months has reached the top. And when the countries who they were pushing those rebels and bringing those takfiris through to Turkey and from Turkey push them to Syrian border and sending the money, fueling the situation in Syria, they have seen there's no military solution to topple the government in Syria and to take over. So now they start residing to go back to a political solution, and they're trying to win one point here or there. Let me say about the coalition or the outside Syrian coalition led by Mu'awiyah al-Khatib. I mean, this is one thing. This coalition is the umbrella for United States, Britain, Saudi Arabia, Qatar. This is the umbrella for their politics. Of course, the coalition is going to refuse, say no, no, no. They are on the no issues all the time. And as Mr. Lavrov said, I mean, they are very naive in politics. But the president today also didn't outline only politics. He outlined also where we're going to take the fight with the terrorists and with this group. He called Al-Qaeda. He called him Al-Qaeda, Jabhat al-Nusra, and the other group. We will fight this group because there is no dialogue with these groups, and there is no solution with this group. This group being pushed to Syria to die in Syria or take over or turn Syria to chaos. So there is two points here. The president of Syria has taking the issues to the Syrian people. Mm-hmm. When he says a dialogue, a national conference, national chapter, being hold referendum from the Syrian people for whatever we agreed for. So he's taking the political initiative from the hands of everybody, okay, put it in the hand of the Syrian politician, and from there in the hands of the Syrian population.
Okay, what about that, Mr. Ibrahim? Do you think that what the president has said can actually be implemented, which you had alluded to earlier, and saying that it would be different if he had the upper hand right now? But do you think that the talk can actually turn into action?
Well, first of all, let me make 2 points. The first point, the gentleman from Washington said that this would have made a difference had it been said 2 months into the crisis in Syria, but I assure him it would have made no difference because this is exactly the same concept that the president or the Syrian government presented since the beginning of the crisis. Let's have a dialogue, let's do this, let's do that, let's sit around a table and decide everything in a table of dialogue. So I think the speech in itself, the content of the speech, would not have made a difference if it was said earlier, the approach of the government remains the same, at least what they say that they want to have a dialogue, they want to communicate with people, and they want to reach a solution. The second point, I think he made the reference to historical revolutions, but I think, and this is a point that many people in the West don't understand, the thing about Syria, when the president was saying that no revolution kills its own people, it's the scale of the killing, it's the scale of the destruction that we are witnessing. It's difficult to witness so-called rebels destroying research centers simply because they are owned by the Syrian government. Those research centers do not produce weapons, and God knows that Syria needs to produce more weapons to fight this war, but they don't, and they are being destroyed.
Okay, well, what about that? Let me turn back to Mr. Weitz in Washington. Mr. Weitz, you said earlier, you had mentioned that had this offer been put on the table early on, that the United States and Turkey, Qatar, would have probably been more accepting. My question to you is, if we're talking about a sovereign nation, what does the United States, Qatar, and Turkey have to do with the Syrian situation?
To clarify, because I think your previous speaker made some very good points. When I said that they were been more open early on, the complaint of the Turks, who, I mean, Erdogan had tried to befriend Assad and work very closely with Assad, and he had pressed him early to make reforms. And my impression is that's probably right. I think your speaker is correct that Assad made statements to this effect early on. But then, according to Erdogan and the Syrian opposition, nothing changed at the ground. So he would make statements, but there was no change. And so they came to believe they could not trust him. And I think that set it off. In terms of the implications, and the Civil War, I just have to recall the Russian Civil War. Remember, there was the Americans intervened, the British intervened, the White and Red Army slaughtered each other. We saw this in the Chinese Civil War, massive, millions of people were killed. So we've been through this before. This is not atypical. With respect to your question about what does the interests of these countries have in what goes on in Syria, it's partly humanitarian. Because of the large number of people that are being killed, that's become now an international concern. It's also because of the peculiar nature of the Syrian state. I mean, it has a large, it's ruled by a minority, ethnic minority, with some support by other ethnic groups, predominantly Alawite. And the groups that are excluded from power have strong connections across the border. So the Kurds, we're all aware of, they straddle Iran, Iraq, Turkey, and Syria. They haven't played that much of a part, but that might be influencing some decision making, maybe on the part of Turkey, for example. But it's primarily the Sunni majority. As we know, during the past two decades, we've seen a radicalization of some Sunni groups. And this has played itself out in various ways, the attack on the U.S., the civil war, I would call it, in Iraq, and so on. And I think that what you're seeing is a lot of the Sunni governments using this unrest as an opportunity to get rid of Assad and put in
Mr. Weitz, with a couple of points that you've just made.
Converse what we saw in Iraq.
Let me just get in here with a couple of points that you have just made. When you say, first of all, you talked about the situation. You said partially it's a humanitarian issue. One, it's a minority government not representing the majority. What is the difference between the situation in Syria and, let's say, the situation in Bahrain for Washington, that nothing is being said, that people are being killed, percentage-wise very large if we look at the small population, and yet mum is the word. So what's the criteria for Washington here?
Well, you struck on a good point. The violence is a magnitude less, I would argue, in Bahrain. But I think the obvious reason is we've got a major naval base in Bahrain that's constraining what the U.S. is willing to say, whereas we don't in the case of Libya.
So it's not humanitarian. Then the criteria then wouldn't be humanitarian,
but I would point out
militaristic.
That there's been a lot of tension.
May I jump in?
Well, the criteria is going to be multiple by definition.
Okay, well, let me switch you over to Damascus. Go ahead, Mr. Ibrahim, you wanted to comment.
Okay,
go ahead.
Moderator.
Damascus, go ahead.
Okay. The point I would like to make is that the esteemed gentleman from Washington is, yes, the gentleman from Washington is saying that the Syrian government is a minority government, and I assure him that with a little bit of scrutiny into the Syrian government officials and the people holding the power in the government, he would realize that this is not a minority government. This not, and by the way, when you refer to Alawites, Shiites, you say they are sectarian minorities, not ethnic ones. In reference to the radicalization, as he called, or the extremism of fighting groups in Syria, this did not happen in the past 2 weeks. I remind the gentleman that almost a year ago, Ayman al-Zawahiri, the leader of Al-Qaeda organization, appeared in a video calling on all people around the world, all the jihadists, to move to Syria and to take part in the war against the regime, against the infidel regime there, as he called it. This happened almost a year ago. I think it was in May 2011. So the radicalization of the fighting groups did not take place a few weeks ago. It took place much longer, much earlier before this. And finally, let me comment about the humanitarian issue. The interest of the Americans and the French and the Qatari and the Turks started much before the so-called humanitarian issue rose in the Syrian crisis. By the time Turkey and Erdogan was lecturing the Syrians about how to govern themselves, there was less than 100 killed, according to opposition sources. We can't verify those sources for many reasons. But Erdogan started lecturing us when less than 100 people were killed. So I think the humanitarian question is a bit, it's not the real reason here. And I think we're beating around the bush to say that the reason the United States of America, France, Turkey would like to interfere in Syria is for humanitarian reasons. United States of America, Turkey, France, Qatar, they're not charity organizations, and they have no interest in the welfare of the Syrian people. Their interest is in their political interests in the region, and their political interests will be served better if the Syrian government, represented in Bashar al-Assad, would fall down. They would have their way better in the Middle East, and it's not a humanitarian issue.
All right, Mr. Al-Sabahi, we're almost out of time. Your take on it, what will it take now from what President Bashar al-Assad said in his speech in order to implement it? Will he be able to make the changes that he's looking for?
Yeah, of course. The president has stood firm from the beginning on what Syria wants, and the plan today is a little bit wider. He put everything on the table. Even he talked about the new constitution. If there is a new parliament, if the political parties agreed, they could discuss the new constitution, they could change it, amend it, whatever it takes. This is what is the outline today is all under Syrian sovereignty between the Syrian without the interference from outside. I agree with the point of Mr. Ibrahim from Damascus about what he said. And let me say to your American guest, I mean, you know, the best thing this coalition did and the SNC before has fooled United States and Britain and Saudi Arabia by saying to them they have a support on the ground, they have the people will uprise with them, the people will throw the government.
Okay, and I am so sorry, Mr. Al-Sabahi. I'm so sorry.
Please,
I am so sorry. We are out of time because we're going to run into the news. I appreciate you, though, for being with us as all of our guests from London, Mr. Haytham Al-Sabahi, from Damascus, Mr. Allah Ibrahim, and from Washington, Mr. Richard Weitz. Thank you all for being with us, and thank you, viewers, for being with us. Make sure you join us right here, same time, same place tomorrow. I'm Marzia Hashimi, signing off for myself and all the crew right here in Tehran. Goodbye, and thank you for being with us.